Why is it more than 100 years later, there's still just tremendous interest in Jack the Ripper, who he might have been? No shortage of suspects for that infamous 19th century murders of London prostitutes. In a moment, our guest Trevor Marriott, as we go live to the United Kingdom, Jack the Ripper, the 21st century investigation. Trevor Marriott is a former British police murder squad detective who for many years has been researching the infamous Whitechapel murders that occurred in London in 1988 and were attributed to a killer known as Jack the Ripper. In 2003, using all his knowledge and expertise, he reinvestigated these horrific murders and the mystery surrounding this fearsome killer. Unlike other researchers, he was able to reinvestigate the murders through the eyes of a modern-day detective using all his knowledge and expertise. He was able to pursue new lines of inquiry never used before, which resulted in a new suspect emerging. He was able to uncover some startling new facts, which now cast a major doubt about many of the original theories and suspects with regards to the murders, the victims, and those suspects. Our guest tonight at Coast to Coast, live from the United Kingdom, Trevor Marriott. Hello, Trevor. How are you?
I'm very fine, thank you.
Good. Hey, I've got to ask you this. Any relationship to the Marriott Hotel group?
Unfortunately not. I keep trying to pursue that line of inquiry, but unfortunately to date, no descendants that can link me, unfortunately.
Nothing, because it is indeed a rare last name, Trevor.
Oh, good.
Tell me a little bit about your investigation. Why does there still see, more than 100 years later, after these horrible murders, why is there still massive evidence in Jack the Ripper and this interest in Jack the Ripper? People just can't stop talking about this person.
No, that's correct. I think the main reason is that obviously the general public, whether it be in the UK or whether it be in the US, are fascinated by sort of grisly, gory crimes. I think that's the first aspect of the sort of Jack the Ripper mystery. And of course, the second is the fact that he was never caught, never identified. And I think thirdly, that over the years, the likes of Hollywood have helped to keep the mystery alive. Every so often, we get a major film released, which adds new interest, which brings new people into the mystery. I know since the Johnny Depp film was released, From Hell, certainly it's introduced a lot of younger people to the mystery. And as I go around talking to people, certainly it's noticeable that a lot of young, teenagers and people in their sort of early 20s have come into the mystery and are fascinated by it. So it's another generation that's been introduced.
How did they coin the name Jack the Ripper? How did that occur?
Well, that occurred basically sometime into the series of murders when the police received a letter which was supposedly written by the killer, and he in fact signed Jack the Ripper, and from that day on the killer was known as Jack the Ripper.
All right, tell me a little bit about you, Trevor, why you got interested in this case.
Well, obviously, because it's a British case anyway, and as a British detective working on many murders, I'd always been interested in the Jack the Ripper crimes because obviously it's been part of our heritage, really. And, of course, every so often there are new programs, there are new bits and pieces that appear in the press from various people who suggest they now know the identity. So, again, as I said earlier, it keeps the sort of interest alive. And as a police detective, you sort of keep it there in the back of your mind. And it was then, obviously, when I had a lot more free time on my hands, that I sat down and decided to sort of, cast a professional eye over everything surrounding the mystery.
Trevor, London, of course, is just an old, old city. Are some of those regions where these murders occur, are they still there? I mean, some of the buildings where the bodies were placed next to and things like that?
No, unfortunately, the sort of, because everything has moved on now, places have been redeveloped, the locations are still there. I think a lot of tourists who come to London, they take part in what's called the Ripper Walks, where they meet at a given location and they are walked around the areas where the murders were committed, although they bear no resemblance now to how they were way back in Victorian times.
Okay, why do they call it Whitechapel murders, and how many victims are we talking about?
Well, Whitechapel, in fact, was a suburb of the East End of London in Victorian times, and in fact, it still is today. The area still is known as Whitechapel. The question of victims is another issue which I delved into very deeply during the course of my investigation. It's generally been accepted for many, many years that Jack the Ripper killed only five victims, and those victims were killed between the 31st of August and the 8th of November. However, when I started to reinvestigate the murders, I uncovered other murders in the same area, also involving prostitutes, also prostitutes who were killed in exactly the same fashion as the accepted five. And moving further on with the inquiry, I also uncovered a series of murders of a similar nature, also involving prostitutes, which occurred in January 1889 in Nicaragua, in the capital city, Managua, and then a further murder which took place in the German seaport town of Flensburg in October 1889, in addition to two other murders of prostitutes back in the Whitechapel area in 1889 and 1891. So my inquiry cast a doubt about whether Jack the Ripper did kill five persons, or whether he killed more, or whether he killed less than was previously attributed to.
Are you assuming he traveled around somewhat?
Well, I think there has to be that suggestion. I mean, looking at the inquiry overall, it would appear that the police of the day who investigated these murders were very blinkered in their approach to catching him. They believed that the killer lived and worked within the Whitechapel area, and they concentrated all of their inquiries into that line of inquiry solely, which in hindsight was not a good thing to do.
So you think that that alone may have been a major flaw in their investigation at the time?
I think it was, yes. I mean, not wanting to sort of decry the Metropolitan Police of the day, I mean, we have to accept that this was over 100 years ago. Police methods and techniques have now moved on.
Well, and they didn't have the kind of technology we have.
No, they didn't.
Beck and call.
We now live with sort of modern technology, forensics and fingerprints and everything akin to that. But in those days, I mean, the police were very basic in their training methods. They joined the police service, a lot of them straight out of the army, were given a manual, were told to read the manual, and then they were sort of put out on the street on patrols. And obviously they never had any training in investigative methods. So, you know, we have to take that into consideration when we sort of say, well, they were blinkered and they didn't do this and they didn't do that. It wasn't, you know, through their fault.
Trevor, given today's technology, do you think Jack the Ripper would have been caught with the kinds of tools we have available today?
Oh, without a doubt, yeah. I mean, without a doubt. I mean, the success rate nowadays for detecting murders is very, very high, and that is down to modern technology. I mean, DNA is the biggest gun in the police arsenal that you could expect nowadays.
Now, these victims, let's get back to them for a little bit because I want to set the stage. Prior to these deaths starting, you know, obviously for the Jack the Ripper to begin, something must have triggered him, something happened. We'll get to that in a moment. These victims then, were they all prostitutes?
Yes, they were. I mean, The Whitechapel area of London was home to many, many prostitutes. And in fact, shortly after some of these murders took place, a survey was done. And within the area of Whitechapel, I think it was recorded there were 1,800 prostitutes all within that small area of London.
Now, when you talk about the similarities of their deaths, I mean, this person didn't just strangle these people or kill them in a very conventional way. He butchered them, didn't he?
Well, I think this is another aspect of the Jack the Ripper murders, which people have sort of got a bit carried away with. All of the victims had their throats cut. Now, a lot of people will say, well, that makes that a hallmark of the Ripper crimes. But one has to appreciate that in Victorian times, the method of killing people was usually to cut their throats. Nowadays, that doesn't happen. Nowadays, people who are murdered using knives, they usually stab to death. But cutting someone's throat in Victorian times was an accepted method of killing someone. So it doesn't make it, quite as clear as people would believe as far as cutting the throats and the Jack the Ripper murders.
Were there any men killed this way, or are we dealing primarily and only with women?
No, the evidence suggests that it is primarily only women. I mean, obviously, the Whitechapel area of London was a very poor area of London, probably the poorest area in London. It was also one of the most crime-ridden areas, and it was also one of the most poverty-stricken areas of London as well. So really, Whitechapel was the sort of probably the worst place in the country to live or work or be at that time.
And I assume beyond the prostitution, these victims didn't have any similar traits. I mean, they weren't all blondes or brunettes or have any specific thing that this person, this serial killer of the time, would have been interested in?
No, there's no evidence to suggest there was anything. The killer had a sort of leaning towards blondes, brunettes. I mean, one has to appreciate that the prostitutes who were killed were, sadly, the lowest of the low. They didn't have any accommodation to go to. They lived on the streets, a lot of them. They had to prostitute themselves each night purely to try to secure enough money to get a bed for the night in one of the many lodging houses that there were. At that particular time, and they were sort of dirty, unwashed, disheveled, and obviously they were easy prey.
Give us a scenario, if you could, Trevor, assuming we had the ability to go back in the time to witness some of this, how would Jack the Ripper work during these days? How would he get his victims? What would he say to them? And then where would he take them?
Well, if we imagine, I mean, prostitution in those days really is much the same as it is nowadays. Prostitutes hang around on street corners, accosting male persons who walk past who are in the vicinity. That wouldn't have changed over the last 117 years. And, of course, they themselves would have been desperate to accost somebody to try to sort of earn some money. So basically, they would have stopped anybody walking by and they would have said, well, are you interested in sex? Do you want sex? It'll cost you whatever. Mm-hmm. And they would have known exactly where they were going to take their victims because the women not having any accommodation to go to, they would have had to use alleyways, back gardens, wherever they could take somebody sort of off the street.
And so the effort of taking the victim was on the male, I guess, at the time then. She didn't take them back to an apartment or anything like that.
No, it was the nearest back garden, the nearest alley to wherever she happened to be standing at that particular time.
So this individual then would simply acknowledge them, say yes, and off they would go. To some corner, and I assume this was all done at night, right?
In the early hours, yes. Most of the murders took place in the early hours of the morning.
What about witnesses, Trevor? Didn't anybody see anyone?
Well, When the police did their inquiries, again, they obviously weren't aware of how a murder inquiry should be conducted, but they did the best they can to try to find any witnesses. But of course, in the area of Whitechapel, it would have been a hive of activity way into the early hours, and there would have been people coming backwards and forwards, and these women would have been accosting almost every man that walked past. So the witnesses that they managed to obtain were classed as unreliable because of the fact that the time span of when they were last seen and when they were found was not always accurate. And even when they did the inquest, the coroner came out and said that a lot of the witness descriptions were unreliable and shouldn't be relied upon too heavily because, you know, the sheer fact of these women accosting so many people at any one time that there is no accurate description of who Jack the Ripper really could have been.
Was there surgical precision in these murders, or
well,
did it just
this is another aspect.
Stand?
This has been an accepted. It's been an accepted theory over the years that Jack the Ripper, after killing these women by cutting their throats, mutilated their bodies, and then the suggestion has been that he surgically removed various organs from their body. But my investigation tends to show that that wasn't correct, that he wasn't a person with any surgical knowledge whatsoever. And in fact, the organs that were removed from these victims were not removed at the time of the murders, but sometime between the murders being committed and the post-mortems being carried out the following day.
Well, but by whom? Who would have removed the organs?
Well, at that particular time, there was a great demand in body parts for research.
Oh, my, yeah, okay.
And now what we have to appreciate is that, if I can just sort of give you the example of how things would have worked, we would have had a situation where the body would have been discovered. The process then would have been the police surgeon would have come along with the police. He would have pronounced the body life extinct with the body. The body would have then been put on a hand cart. It would have been wheeled away to a makeshift mortuary. And then there's certainly evidence that the body was then left out. Some of these bodies were left outside or left unattended for up to 12 hours after they were discovered. Before the actual post-mortems were committed. So there's every reason to suggest that perhaps somebody looking for parts for medical research, a medical student, a doctor, or whatever, could have approached one of the poverty-stricken attendants who would have been perhaps looking after the body, who could have turned a blind eye and allowed them to remove various organs. That's how I would suggest they were perhaps removed surgically by somebody that knew what they were doing, but not at the time of the murders.
Trevor, we've got lots more to talk with you about this incredible case of Jack the Ripper. Your book called Jack the Ripper, The 21st Century Investigation. Excellent reading, by the way. Is it now available in the United States?
It is, yes. For anybody that wants to obtain it, I believe it's available readily on Amazon.
Okay.
And other parts of the U.S.
And your website, would you spell that for us?
Yes, it's www.trevormarriott, M-A-R-R-I-O-T-T, that's all one word, .co.uk. And I believe you do have a link to it on your website for your radio station.
Absolutely. Well, stay with us. When we come back, we'll talk about what evidence there might have been at the time of the murders, and then we'll slowly move our way into the suspects, and then later on tonight find out who Trevor believes may have been the suspect. I'm George Norrie. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, you may hear crickets in the background on this one. Campfire time. I'm telling you, we have had a swarm of crickets after some blistering storms rolled through St. Louis. I'll be back in Los Angeles, by the way, Monday the 26th with the program. There are no crickets there. I've never heard them. But in this case, you may hear them chirping throughout this interview. So some of you will enjoy it. I hope the rest of you do not find it too annoying, but there's nothing I can do about it. They're swarming all over the place. We'll be back in a moment with our special guest tonight, Trevor Marriott, live from the United Kingdom, Jack the Ripper, the 21st Century Investigation. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie, Trevor Marriott, our guest. Trevor, let's talk about some of the evidence that was found around these murder cases here back some 100 years ago, 1888. What did they look for? How could they put evidence together then?
Well, unfortunately, the only method they had of really detecting crimes such as this way back in Victorian times was really one of three methods. The first was to either catch the person committing the crime. The second would have been to have sufficient witnesses to the crime being committed by a suspect. And the third would have been for a person who had been arrested to make a full and frank admission. As you said earlier, there wasn't modern technology around in those days, so those were the only accepted methods the police could rely on for detecting their crimes.
They didn't have polygraph tests. They didn't have the ability to check DNA. Of course, we didn't have that for a long time anyway.
No.
But you're right. They didn't have little cameras pointed away. The fact that these victims, Trevor, were prostitutes, did that make it more difficult to try to solve this problem, this crime?
I think the difficulty was that the police in Victorian times had never had to deal with a serial killer in the past. Most of the sort of isolated crimes, murders of that nature were detected very easily even in that day, because a lot of the time there were sufficient witnesses around. It was either domestically orientated. And of course, when they suddenly had this serial killer, it really sort of caused them immense problems.
Well, now, when the first one started, they obviously started looking around for a suspect. They couldn't put anything together. And it seems like these murders, let's assume you're correct, that these murders may have occurred a little before that and definitely after the fact, that they thought were simply the Whitechapel murders. What do you think started these murders? What triggered this individual?
Well, I guess the same motives for killing would have been around in Victorian times as is around nowadays. Perhaps the killer was someone that had a hatred of prostitutes. That's quite a possibility. Perhaps he was a loner. Perhaps he was a person that used to avail himself of prostitutes on a regular basis. Perhaps as a result of using prostitutes, he contracted a sexually transmitted disease. And if that be the case, it could possibly have been syphilis, which is a sexual disease that does affect the brain and could have driven him to the point of madness, and could have perhaps wanted him to vent his anger on prostitutes who had subjected him to this horrible illness.
It seems to me that all the suspects that I've heard about were gentlemen who were of well means. They were well dressed. Would they have stuck right out in that area of Whitechapel, or were there a lot of men who would go down and frequent that area at the time?
Well, yes, you are right. Anybody that was of well-dressed, well-groomed appearance would have certainly stuck out in Whitechapel and would have most certainly been probably a potential victim for robbers, muggers, which would again still been prevalent in that day and age. So it would have been highly unlikely that somebody would have gone down there wearing a top hat and a black cape, which is how Jack the Ripper has been perceived by many people over the years.
Ironically, I'm broadcasting today out of St. Louis, Missouri, Trevor, and there was a suspect that some believed, his name was Dr. Francis Tumblety,
yes,
that he eventually may have been a suspect in these murders, but he went back to St. Louis, where he died of apparent heart attack in one of our local hospitals that is no longer around. I find that strange, broadcasting from a city where Jack the Ripper might have ended up his life.
Well, yes, Francis Tumblety was looked upon by some researchers as a suspect for Jack the Ripper. He was around in London around the time of the murders. And as you say, he then left London and went back to the US. But of course, if you look into Tumblety and his background, Tumblety in actual fact was born of Irish descent. And I understand that while he was in the US, he may well have had some military service at one point. And I'm also given to understand that he was a main suspect in the conspiracy to assassinate Abraham Lincoln. However, I understand there was never any evidence to actually prove
right.
that he was a party to that. But that, in fact, showed his links to, I suppose, terrorist organizations. And, of course, then in London at the time of these Whitechapel murders, the police had another problem on their hands with problems with Irish terrorists. So, of course, the link that there could be between London and Tumblety could have been the Irish terrorist connection where, again, as you're probably aware, that way back when we had the problems with the IRA in London in the 1970s, mm-hmm. that the suggestion was that they were being funded by organizations in the US. So, again, even way back then, it was still, you know, a problem.
Let's go through some of the suspects, the known suspects, Trevor. How many are we talking about?
Well, there is a long, long list. I mean, it would seem that every person that got arrested for carrying a knife suddenly became a suspect. Every person that got arrested for a stabbing incident became a suspect. And in fact, it would be fair to say that the police really had no suspects of their own at the time of these murders. A lot of these suspects that have been put forward are contemporary suspects. The police only, in fact, arrested one person during the time these murders were taking place, and they had to then release him because he had a cast-iron alibi, and he subsequently sued the police for wrongful arrest. But there is a long, long list, and really that long list is based purely on wild theories and speculations by various people.
Would there be individuals, for example, who would contact the police and say, I think this guy, you know, like whoever he could be, John Drewitt Montague, he does this and he's strange. I think he's on. And so you became a suspect just by someone pointing their finger at you?
Well, that would appear to be the case. You know, the police were desperate to try to catch this killer through and use varying methods. I mean, the police pulled out all the stops as far as trying to get information. They put up posters in and around the Whitechapel area suggesting, as I said earlier, that the killer lived and worked there and for people to come forward. But nobody came forward. During the time of all these murders being committed, the police were working undercover. They had officers working undercover. They had officers disguised as women. But, of course, it just did not prove fruitful at all. And again, if you look at a map where all these murders took place, the various locations, my suggestion is that the killer didn't live and work in Whitechapel at all. And where the murders were took place, it's only a very short distance away from Whitechapel onto one of the main thoroughfares away from Whitechapel in various locations. So, as I say, I don't concur with them that he lived and worked in Whitechapel.
We have a serial killer who has been arrested and has pled guilty. He got caught because he couldn't stop writing letters. And, you know, he eventually screwed up by doing what he did. Had he simply did his dastardly deeds and kind of faded away out of the limelight, I don't think they ever would have caught this individual, Trevor. Be that as it may, this Jack the Ripper, did he write a lot of letters to the newspapers at the time or police, or was he pretty silent?
Well, I think you probably appreciate that when there is any murder takes place, that there are always individuals that see fit to want to send in letters to the police and the authorities suggesting that they are the killer and deliberately try to impede a police inquiry. That still takes place in this day and age. And, of course, it was still the case way back 100 years ago. The police received hundreds of letters during these series of murders, all purporting to be from the killer. The police, in fact, did arrest several people and charged them with wasting police time. But generally, I have to say, I've sort of reviewed a greater percentage of these letters, and my personal opinion is that I believe that all of them are false and hoax letters.
You know what? That's kind of stupid on their part to hoax letters, because if they got caught, it would almost, at that time, with the lack of evidence, almost would have been an admission that this person was guilty.
Well, that's right, because obviously in this day and age, again, getting back to modern forensic methods, we have methods of now of lifting fingerprints from paper, documents, envelopes, letters. We have methods of obtaining DNA from stamps, from people licking letters. We have handwriting experts now that can examine handwriting. So as you quite rightly said, that if any of them had got caught, they would have probably been in great difficulty.
Do you think we're dealing with one serial killer here at the time, Trevor, or were there copycats?
Well, there are always copycat murders, again, still in this day and age. But if we go back to the original five victims that I mentioned earlier, which were supposedly the accepted five, when you look at those five, there is definitely one victim, and that's Elizabeth Stride, which was one of the two that were killed on the same day. I think the general feeling is that she was not a Ripper victim, that she was just a victim of the Whitechapel Society. She may well have been killed by her longtime lover, a man by the name of Michael Kidney, who she'd apparently had a torrid relationship with over the period of time they were together. And everything surrounding her murder doesn't fit the pattern of the other murders.
The suspects then, in terms of notoriety, any of them really stick out as special? Now, I know you've done your own investigation. We're going to get into that next hour. But in terms of the suspects that people generally have kicked around, who are some of the most notorious?
Well, the most notorious, obviously, is Prince Albert Victor, who was grandson to Queen Victoria and heir apparent to the British throne. He was, I mean, I think if you talk to people around the world about Jack the Ripper who are interested, he is the first person they mention as being the prime suspect. But of course, again, like anything, everybody loves conspiracies involving government or royalty. And of course, that's why he has sort of been top of the list of suspects in a lot of people's eyes over the years, purely because of that.
Was he a suspect at the time, or
no, he
did
wasn't.
He become one?
No, he didn't become a suspect until the 1970s.
Well, I bet he's glad he's long gone then.
And again, as far as that's concerned, Generally, I could uncover nothing to suggest that he had any links to these murders. In fact, I took the unprecedented step of contacting Her Majesty the Queen at Buckingham Palace, and I thought, well, I will take the bull by the horns and go direct. And I wrote to Her Majesty saying that it was my intention to reinvestigate these murders, and as far as her relative was concerned, I was going to try to exonerate him. And she instructed persons from the Royal Archives to provide me with documentation which clearly showed that on the dates and times of all the murders, he was in various locations away from London.
Was he a little strange for him to be a suspect in the 1970s? Somebody obviously came up with this theory, right?
They did, yes. The theory surrounding the prince really is totally unfounded, the suggestion being that there are two theories actually surrounding the prince. One of the theories is that he used to visit the East End of London and formed a relationship with a prostitute, or it's not clear as to whether she was a prostitute, but formed a relationship with a commoner, a lady by the name of Annie Crook, and as a result of that relationship, they are supposed to have had a child, and they are supposed to have set up a home together somewhere in London. And of course, Queen Victoria is supposed to have found out about his indiscretion and took steps to eliminate the problem by taking the girl away. And that's how part and parcel of his so-called involvement in the Ripper murders has come to light.
Who is the chief suspect prior to your investigation? Who did people think might have been Jack the Ripper?
Well, depending on who you talk to, everybody has their own individual suspect. The problem with the Jack the Ripper murders is that over the years, the fact has been overtaken by fiction. So much so that the facts have been totally distorted, and unfortunately, the day and age that we live in, it's people will read and accept, they will take in and accept what they read in press reports, that in books and various other things. So different people have different views on different suspects. The problem is that I have to say there isn't a scrap of concrete evidence really that supports any of the suspects, and as a professional investigator, one can only work with the facts and not speculations and wild theories.
I was going to say, what was it about this case then, Trevor, that led you to want to reinvestigate it on the pure fact that you didn't think these suspects were capable of being Jack the Ripper?
Well, it was really a fascinating case to sort of get your teeth into, really, because when you start to read the various books and the various aspects, as a professional investigator, you look at things and you say, well, this can't be right, that can't be right, where has that come from, and, you know, why has that been mentioned, and is there anything to corroborate this, is there anything to support this, and it's, you know, it's fascinating when you really sit down and look at it. It was really, in effect, going back 100 years, because when I first joined the police service in 1970, again, we never had the benefit of the DNA technology that they have nowadays. So a lot of murder inquiries were done very much basic legwork, old-style investigations, which is what the police have Victorian times would have had to done. So effectively, I've had to sort of take myself back 100 years and do a modern day investigation, but still using old fashioned police methods, albeit I've been able to add my professional knowledge and expertise to those methods.
All right, stay with us, Trevor Marriott. We'll be back with much more in the case of Jack the Ripper, the 21st century investigation. I'm George Norrie, and this is Coast to Coast AM.